For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome. I've been doing a series of talks on the cases in the Book of Serenity Koan collection, the Shoyoroku, in Japanese, and I'm continuing this weekend focusing on case 8 about Baizhang's fox. And there is so much to say about this, and I'm going to bring in related material and kind of try and cover the whole terrain today. And then go deeper in the next couple of days, but I'll just start with the case itself. When Baizhang lectured in the hall, there was always an old man who listened to the teaching and then departed with the crowd. One day he didn't leave. Baizhang then asked him, "Who is it standing there?" The old man said, "In antiquity, in the time of the ancient Buddha Kashyapa, I lived on this mountain." So that is to say that he was the teacher there in this, previous age, previous Kalpa, previous Big Bang, whatever. He was Baizhang. He was the teacher at this place because teachers were named after the mountain, the place where they lived. So, he goes on, "A student asked me, 'Does a greatly cultivated person still fall into cause and effect or not?' I answered him, 'He does not fall into cause and effect. And I fell into a wild fox body for 500 lives. Now I ask the teacher, Baizhang, to turn a word in my behalf.' Baizhang said, 'He is not blind to cause and effect, or does not ignore cause and effect.' The old man was greatly enlightened at these words." So, there are so many aspects to this story. It's obviously a story about karma. One thing to say, there's so many things to say. The two sides are not falling into cause and effect or not subject to cause and effect. And then there's not being blind to cause and effect. So how do we not ignore our ancient twisted karma? How do we not become blind to our ancient twisted karma? The other side is not falling into cause and effect, which is to be beyond conditions. So referencing some ultimate awareness beyond ordinary cause and effect. So just to note, this is also, I'll come back to this is also case 2 in the Gateless Barrier, Wu Men Guan, or Mu Mon Kan in Japanese. And some of you may have first heard this story in terms of the common English translations of that. So, Eitkin Roshi, Shibayama, Yamada Koan, Sekida, all say, all read it as, does an enlightened man still fall into cause and effect or not? That's not what the characters say. So Stephen Hine and Tom Cleary's translation say a greatly cultivated person. So the same story as in the Book of Serenity. But that's given a kind of a tinge to this story. I'm guessing, but I think it's probably reasonable to think that this is a common interpretation in Japanese Rinzai Zen, or in some of Japanese Rinzai Zen, because they all translated the gateless barrier is an enlightened person. Does an enlightened person not fall into cause and effect? Anyway, the original, the Chinese, is clearly does a greatly cultivated person, someone who's practiced a lot, fall into cause and effect. I'll come back to that, and I'll come back to the gateless barrier story, because there's a whole second part of this story which appears in that case and also appears in the Book of Serenity just in Wansong's commentary on it. But I first want to just look at the basic issue here. What is our relationship to cause and effect? And after great cultivation, does one still fall into cause and effect? Again, Hongzhe is the person who originated the Book of Serenity, picked the cases and the verse, wrote the main verse commentary, and then later Wansong wrote commentaries on all of those. Wansong says in his commentary to the case, in terms of not blind and to cause and effect, he based his logic on actuality. Not falling into cause and effect is forced denial. So it's interesting that in the gateless barrier, this is the second case, right after the case about dog's Buddha nature and Mu, so which is presenting emptiness teaching in really an elaborate way. Here he says, not falling into cause and effect is forced denial, a nihilistic view. So one understanding of not falling into cause and effect would be to ignore the conditions of the world and to think that one's practice had provided one with some kind of superiority or something, some kind of separateness from ordinary conditions. The Wansong goes on, not being blind to cause and effect or not ignoring cause and effect is finding the wondrous along with the flow. So to be in causes and conditions and find the wondrous there. This is, in some sense, basic Mahayana, that samsara is right, nirvana is right in samsara. Nirvana is not escape from samsara. And emptiness teaching has all too often been misunderstood as a forced denial, as Wansong puts it, a kind of nihilistic view. To be something that can happen, particularly, you know, maybe more, we have some protection against it, being a non-residential urban center in the middle of the city, and and cause and effect is in our face every day. But, you know, if you're immersed in monastic or long meditation and really commune with this aspect of that which is beyond cause and effect, one can use that as an escape. One can use that as one can feel like one is caught in, sometimes it's referred to the dragon's cave or the cave of emptiness. Throughout Zen history, a warning. There's a warning against this. So the issue here is about the relationship between cause and effect and not being blind to cause and effect on one side and not falling into cause and effect on the other. That's the basic issue in this story. Now, it's interesting that there's so many different aspects to this story. Just, I'll tell you the second part of the story with Huangpo, in which there's a kind of exorcism. So there's a supernatural side to this. And foxes in Native American culture are kind of tricksters, but can be benevolent. In almost all of East Asian culture, foxes are malevolent. That needs to be said. And in some ways, there's also a question or an issue about this old man, this previous Baizhang, being freed from cause and effect just by Baizhang's turning word. So that's also, you know, a question. In some ways, Baizhang has performed an exorcism and gotten rid of the... An exorcism was part of Buddhist practice and Zen practice and Soto Zen practice in Japan, too, dealing with demons and spirits and so forth. So one can see the story in those terms. So much going on here. But Baizhang himself represents as a kind of figure in Chan and Zen, Baizhang or Hyakujo is the Japanese pronunciation for those who know that. Baizhang is said to have written the first monastic regulations for Zen. Whether it was actually Baizhang who wrote the first monastic regulations, there is a short text that is attributed to him. Also, though, Baizhang is famous for a story when he became old and his monks didn't want him to go out and work in the fields and tried to protect him, and they hid his tools, and he refused to come out of his cabin and refused to eat, and then finally said, "A day without work is a day without food." So this is not being blind to cause and effect, to see that one needs to be involved in the world of cause and effect, the world of causes and conditions. But again, as Wansung said, not being blind is to cause and effect, is finding the wondrous along with the flow, right in the flow, to find the ultimate, that which is unconditioned, right in the world of cause and effect. So there's a turning in attention around all of this. I'll read Hongzhi's verse comment and say a little bit about that. A foot of water, a fathom of wave, for 500 lives he could not do a thing. Not falling, not blind, they haggle, as before entering a nest of complications. So this three-day sesshin could be called a nest of complications. Sorry, here you are. Aha, Hongzhi's verse goes on. Ah, ha, ha, understand? If you are clear and free, there's no objection to my babble. The spirit songs and shrine dances spontaneously form a harmony, clapping in the intervals, singing la-di-da. So, this is Hongzhi's verse comments. There's lots of other comments to this. And I want to talk, maybe focus on Dogen's comments. To some extent. But first I want to go back to the story, because there's the longer version of the story, which is the whole case for the gateless barrier, Mumon Khan or Wumen Guan, includes something that Wansung just adds into the commentary to the case. So Hongzhi apparently felt that just going to the just going as far as the old Baizhang being enlightened after hearing not blind to cause and effect, that turning word, not ignoring cause and effect, that's the crux of the story. Hongzhi did not include the rest in this case. But in the gateless barrier version of the story, I'll read it from the gateless barrier. It's also in the Wansung's commentary. I'll read this version of it. So I have numbers of translations of all these different things. This is Tom Cleary's translation. Oops. The first part is the same as the Book of Serenity, basically. Little differences, but nothing significant. So the old man asked, are greatly cultivated people still subject to causality? Do they fall into causality? And Bajang said, they're not blind to causality. And the old man was greatly enlightened at these words. Then the story goes on in the gateless barrier. Bowing, the old man said, I have shed the wild fox body, which remains on the other side of the mountain. I am taking the liberty of telling you and asking you to perform a monk's funeral. So the master, Bajang, had one of the group hit the sounding board, that's the han that's out here, and announce to the community that they would send off a dead monk, have a funeral for a dead monk after mealtime. So funerals for monks or priests are a very elaborate affair still in Zen. The community was startled and debated about this, wondering how it could be so, seeing that everyone was fine. All of the regular members of the Sangha, and there had been no one in the infirmary. After the meal, the master led the group to a cave on the other side of the mountain, where he fished out a dead fox with his staff. Then he cremated it and had this service for a dead fox. And there's a whole book about this koan by Stephen Hine called Shifting Shape, Shaping Text. And I think he has pictures in here of the place where they found the fox body. Anyway, so there's so many. This is such a funny story. So he performed this monk's funeral for a fox, which just that is scandalous. Here's Bajang, who's the representative of monastic regulations, the master of forms, doing a fancy monk's funeral for a fox. Foxes, again, are these malevolent creatures that take over and possess people. So that's the second part of the story. The third part is that evening, this is all in the Wumon Kwan, that evening the master went up in the hall and recounted the foregoing events, including his dialogue with this old man. Huangpo was a great student of Bajang, who later became the teacher of Linji or Rinzai. Huangpo asked, an ancient who gave a mistaken answer fell into the state of a wild fox for 500 lifetimes. What becomes of one who never makes a mistake? I don't know if any of you know such a person. But Huangpo asked this question, challenging his teacher. And the teacher, Bajang, said, come here and I'll tell you. Huangpo approached and then he gave the master a slap in the face. The master clapped and said, I thought foreigners' beards were red. There is even a red-bearded foreigner here. So this is acknowledging. So this is a reference to Bodhidharma, who was called this foreigner who had a red beard. Some say he was from Persia. Anyway, it's basically Bajang approving of Huangpo. So when Bajang asked Huangpo to come up, we might guess that Bajang was going to slap Huangpo. That in that school later on in that lineage, that became one mode of teaching. So the question again, there's all kinds of questions about who is it who can say what is beyond causes and conditions, not falling into causes and conditions. But there's also a reference here when he's talking about foreigners' beards were red. In addition to the reference to Bodhidharma, there's also the fox, the red fox. So anyway, so that's the longer version of the story, which is in some later versions of the Transmission of the Lamp. It's not in the early version. And I don't know if Dogen actually even knew that version of the story. He just comments on Dogen did not have access to the Book of Serenity and Wansung's comments. He just but he did have Hongzhi's cases and verses. In the Gateless Barrier, there's shorter commentaries. There's not the verse commentary and the comments on all of those in the introduction, like in the Book of Serenity and the Blue Cliff Record. But I'll say something about, I'll quote what Wu Men says. He has a, for every case, he has a brief prose and verse commentary. If not falling into cause and effect, how could one degenerate into a wild fox? Right? So one couldn't have become a wild fox if they weren't if they hadn't fallen into cause and effect. If not blind to causality, how would one be liberated from being a wild fox? Is that a violation of cause and effect for this wild fox to be freed by Baizhang? What's the cause and effect here? If you can set a single eye here, then you will know how the former resident of the mountain gained 500 lifetimes of elegance. So in that comment, implies that these 500 lifetimes of being this horrible wild fox were actually 500 lifetimes of elegance. Maybe the former Baizhang deliberately transgressed and knew that he would or was willing to become a wild fox for 500 lifetimes, just for the sake of this story that we're talking about now. I don't know. There's all kinds of ways to turn the story. Then Wu Men's verse is important in terms of the dynamics of what's going on. He says, not subject, not blind, two faces of one die, or two sides of one coin. Not blind, not subject, 1,000 errors, 10,000 mistakes. Okay, so there seems to be a traditional interpretation in Chan, in Chinese Chan, about this story. It's there in Hongzhi's verse too. So Hongzhi says, all of these different texts, he says, not falling, not blind, they haggle, entering a nest of complications. Ha ha, do you understand? Hongzhi implies, he doesn't quite say it, that not falling into cause and effect and not ignoring cause and effect are two sides of one coin, to put it that way. There is, in most of the Chinese commentary, that sense of, well, ultimately, they're not separate. So I want to talk about that, and I want to talk about how we might see that. But that brings me to Dogen, our founder in Japan, who brought this koan tradition in the 1200s to Japan. And Dogen commented on this story many times. In fact, there's two different Shobogenzo essays about this. One earlier one is called Dai Shugyo, Great Cultivation, Great Practice. And he kind of takes in that one this side of seeing the possibility of not the non-separation of not falling into cause and effect and not ignoring cause and effect. This is a little bit problematic. In a later Shobogenzo essay, one of his latest, Jinshin Inga, Deep Faith in Cause and Effect, Dogen takes a very different view and very strongly comes down on the side of not ignoring cause and effect and emphasizes not ignoring cause and effect and emphasizes precepts and ethical conduct. And, you know, for those of you who've looked at Dogen some, there has been some stereotypical idea of there being an early Dogen and a late Dogen, and actually it's much more complicated than that. Stephen Hine's book, Did Dogen Go to China, goes into the various nuances of Dogen's career and finds 9 different phases. And my own feeling is that Dogen does not change his view on anything except this story. Basically, the shifts in emphasis from his earlier career in Kyoto to Heiji could be, you know, a function of the audience he was speaking to. When Dogen got to Heiji, when he moved in 1243 from, kind of abruptly, he moved his whole community from Kyoto to the deep mountains of what's now Fukui and founded Heiji, he was emphasizing monastic practice and the virtue of monks. And anyway, so there are, but really I think the one shift in Dogen is not about that, but is about this story. So again, these two, maybe I'll talk more about these two Shobogenzo essays in the next couple of days, but in Daishugyo, Great Cultivation, or sometimes it's translated as Great Enlightenment, I don't think that's accurate, sort of takes this side that Hongzhe and Wu Men take of they're related. In Jinshininga, Deep Faith in Cause and Effect, and this is that was in the very end of Dogen's career, died in 1253, basically his last teachings are from 1252, when he started to emphasize the precepts, and we do the 16 Bodhisattva precepts here, and the importance of ethical conduct. Okay? So, in addition to the Shobogenzo, there are, in Eikoroku, there are several places in Dogen's extensive record where he talks about this case. So I picked out 3 of them that I want to read and talk about what's going on here. So, the first one is Dharma Hall Discourse 94. This is from 1242, so still in Kyoto a year before he left. And that was the time when most of Shobogenzo was written, within a few years of that. So this Dharma Hall Discourse, after relating the story of Baizhang and the fox, and I'm not sure if he has the part about Huangpo. I would guess not. Anyway, Dogen said, "Mountains, rivers, and the great earth are the cave of the wild fox." So this phenomenal world is the cave of the wild fox. "Receive and discard one piece of skin, flesh, and bone. Cause and effect are very clear and not a personal matter. Partridges sing incessantly in late spring, and 100 flowers vanish." So here he's celebrating the world of phenomena, the world of cause and effect, the world of conditions, mountains, rivers, and the great earth. They can also be the cave of the wild fox, but how do we recognize this as very clear? And then he has this poetic passage about the partridges sing, which he refers to a number of other places as a kind of way of expressing the beauty of the world. But he has this line in here, "Cause and effect are very clear and not a personal matter." So I want to talk more about that. I think that's very important to how we can work with this koan in our situation of cause and effect. So that was 1242. In 1246, he has another Dharma Hall discourse, number 205. After relating the story of Baizhang and the wild fox, Dogen asked his assembly, "Because of the previous Baizhang saying that he did not fall into cause and effect, why did he descend into a wild fox body? As to the later Baizhang saying he was not blind to cause and effect, how did this or how could this cause the release from the wild fox body?" So he's questioning. You know, and this is a place where we see Dogen really intensely questioning both sides of this. And then Dogen said, I can't stand this wild fox monster shaking his head and wagging his tail. Stop, stop. So clearly Dogen struggled with this story. On the one side, why is it, how is it that the old man saying that he did not fall into cause and effect caused him to descend into 500 lifetimes as a wild fox? But then the later Baizhang saying he was not blind to cause and effect, how could this cause the release from the wild fox body of the old man? This is the question. And Dogen is having a hard time with it. I can't stand this wild fox monster, he calls it. So again, my own view is that Dogen, this is the one place where Dogen really had a shift. Okay, here's another Dharma Hall discourse from 1252, number 510. This is one of his last teachings. His last year of teaching, and one of the later ones. Students of the way cannot dismiss cause and effect. If you discard cause and effect, you will ultimately deviate from practice realization. And we know the story about Huineng saying to Nanyue that practice realization cannot be defiled. But here, or Nanyue saying it and Huineng saying that's exactly, the sixth ancestor saying that's exactly what all Buddha ancestors take care of. But Dogen here says, if you discard cause and effect, you will ultimately deviate from practice realization. And I referred to the Japanese Rinzai Zen reading of great cultivation as enlightenment, and we have seen in history of American Zen, people who thought they were above cause and effect getting into lots of trouble through their transgressions. So, and this keeps happening. So this is an important matter. And Dogen says again in this last Dharma Hall discourse, if you discard cause and effect, you will ultimately deviate from practice realization. Then after relating the story of Baizhang's wild fox, Dogen said, someone doubted this, saying, a wild fox is an animal. How could it remember 500 lifetimes? So there's lots of things about just this fox and its nature and what's going on in the story and the exorcism and what are wild foxes anyway? This doubt is most foolish, Dogen says. You should know that various living beings, either animal or human, are inherently endowed with the power to know past lives. Which is another, you know, it's a whole separate issue, but very interesting that sometimes knowing past lives is considered one of the powers of the Buddha, but other beings besides Buddhas can know past lives. And Dogen here is saying that various beings, either animal or human, are inherently endowed with this possibility. So this opens up, and Stephen Hine in his book about this koan goes into much more detail about what's going on in terms of the nature of the supernatural and foxes and the whole mythology about that in China. Anyway, Dogen goes on. Someone said, not falling into cause and effect and not ignoring are one and the same, and yet either falling or being released simply happens spontaneously, unquote. Dogen says, such views are completely outside the way. In effect, heretical. Today, I, Dogen, will add a comment. If you say people of great cultivation do not fall into cause and effect, you are certainly dismissing cause and effect. If you say they do not ignore cause and effect, you have not avoided counting the neighbor's treasure. Are you ignoring cause and effect? After a pause, Dogen said, After many years of residing on this mountain, a black staff becomes a dragon, and this morning arouses wind and thunder. So Dogen had been up in Heiji area for almost 10 years. This is a great caution to us about not ignoring cause and effect. I want to go back, though. So there's so much to say about all of this. But I want to go back to the first Dharma Hall discourse I read from Dogen. Mountains, rivers, and the great earth are the cave of the wild fox. Receive and discard one piece of skin, flesh, and bones. So cause and effect are very clear. And not a personal matter. And then he talks about the partridges and the 100 flowers. So for us, looking at this koan, you know, the issue of karma, the question of karma, and then, you know, the whole idea of rebirth, like this fox for 500 lifetimes, is a very complex question, a very tricky question, one of the more contentious issues in Buddhist and Zen philosophy, to put it that way. And not to overgeneralize, but I think in most of Asian Buddhist and Zen history, they've thought of karma as personal. And here Dogen is saying it's not a personal matter. So all this, there are lots of stories in folklore about rebirths and past lives in Japanese and the Zen tradition, China too. And usually it's understood as, you know, if something good happens to you, that's because you did something good in a past life, or vice versa. If something bad happens, it's the result of your previous wrongdoing. And Dogen talks that way sometimes too. But there's also this teaching of non-self and this teaching of interconnectedness. And I would say that karma is not just a personal matter. And we see this very clearly now, here, in our time and place. So there's also collective karma. And I've talked about the effects on all of us of the collective karma of our country, of slavery and racism, of killing off many Native American cultures. That previous karma affects us as maybe as much or more than our personal karma. So I'm not saying there's not personal karma. Of course, what we do that is wholesome produces wholesome results eventually, and vice versa. But we have this powerful example today with this huge climate damage storm, Florence, in the Carolinas. And I guess it's affecting Virginia and Georgia too. And just went before I left to come here around 5 or 6 this morning, there was the eye hadn't hit the coast yet, but there was this tremendous flooding. And, you know, people will be killed. People will lose all they have. And I would say this is not because of their personal karma. Well, maybe they decided to live there or they were born there, but it's kind of amazing because, you know, most of the TV weather people do not mention that this is affected by climate change and climate damage, and that which warms the water and very much increases the intensity of these hurricanes. You know, and we have the example of California fires and now East Coast hurricanes. all natural events enhanced greatly by the fossil fuel industry. To their knowledge, back in the 70s, they knew the effects of climate damage. And North Carolina, that's now being battered, the government there outlawed any mention of climate change amongst their officials. It's illegal for them to mention climate change, and the scientists who work for them, and so forth. And the Trump government very recently, transferred $10 million, maybe you've heard this, from FEMA, who is responsible for responding to storms and the effects of storms and the people who are damaged by storms. They transferred $10 million from FEMA to ICE, to the immigration agency, who is now building more detention camps. Some of them are in Southwest Texas, but they're also around the country. But there's now 12,800 children detained indefinitely in camps in our country because they tried to come into the country, or in some cases maybe because they're the wrong ethnicity. So this is the collective karma that we should not ignore, that we cannot ignore. And of course it affects people personally, but this is ancient twisted karma that goes way back. It's not just the current government that has created this problem. Anyway, there's a lot more to say about all of that, but it's certainly relevant to what Dogen's saying and what this case is saying, and there's so much more to talk about all of this. On some level, perhaps not ignoring cause and effect while also ignoring that which doesn't fall into cause and effect might be as much of a problem as the wild fox had because of ignoring cause and effect. So I'm not going to say the two sides are the same, and I'll stand with Dogen emphasizing the importance of the precepts in our ethical conduct, but part of our practice, and particularly relevant during Sesshin, is to immerse ourselves in this samadhi of all beings. One name for zazen, that we are connected to many beings. I heard that one of the problems in North Carolina is going to be they have many hog farms right near the coast, and there is manure and other waste from that is going to now be, it's very toxic and is going to now go into all the waterways. So the after effects of the hurricane are going to be not just what happens in the next several days, although they're going to have massive amounts of rain for several days in that whole area. But is there a not ignoring cause and effect that can be informed by not being caught by cause and effect? How can we not ignore cause and effect in a way that we don't get caught by it? Which is to say, how can we respond, so the bodhisattva way, and maybe the old Baizhang did this by becoming a wild fox for 500 lifetimes, so we could talk about this, but part of our practice is the integration of, not just part of our practice, the whole point of our practice is the integration of seeing that which goes beyond cause and effect while not ignoring cause and effect, while not blind to cause and effect, while not turning away from even the collective karma that's destroying people's lives in the Southeast right now. How do we face cause and effect, including our personal karma, and at the same time bring to that something of the deeper communion into the ultimate unconditioned reality, which is not caught by cause and effect. So that's my attempt at some synthesis there. But there's lots of ways to turn this story. That's why this koan has been studied for 1,000 years along with the others. But any part of it that we go to, many implications. So just to throw in one more piece, talking about the interaction between Bai Zhang, the teacher who did a monk's funeral for a fox, and his student Huang Po, who came up and slapped him. Later, Yang Shan, another great master, said, this is in the Wansong's commentary to the Book of Serenity, Bai Zhang attained the great capacity, Huang Po attained the great function. They didn't have their names for no reason. So, great capacity and great function. So, our capacity, communing with that which is beyond cause and effect, or includes cause and effect, but is Bai Zhang's turning word. But then there's this great function. How do we actually go up and respond to the world, sometimes with a slap, whatever? How do we respond to the authority that insists that there's no climate change, even as California burns and the southeast coast is deluged with floods? Well, there's lots to talk about here. For those of us who are here for the day, we'll have a discussion period this afternoon over tea, and we'll be talking about this for the next couple of days. And basically, I've laid out all the material of this today, but there's so much more to talk about. But I'll take a few minutes now if anybody has any comment or response or question about this right now. Yes, Phyllis. Well, part of the story is that you can't go beyond. But to see that which is not caught by, I think that's a way of putting it, does not fall into cause and effect. Maybe we fall into cause and effect. Of course we do, every day. But how do we, you know, the partridges sing, the flowers bloom and fade. How do we write in cause and effect, not be caught by it, be willing to pay attention and respond? That's what I would say. But maybe somebody else has something. Yes, on.
Well, I was thinking, I mean, there's that, if you cannot go beyond cause and effect, maybe the emphasis might be you cannot go beyond cause and effect. And this also yoga's view of this is cause and effect. It's not a personal matter. The idea it has to do with the idea that that karma inheres in a person, or that awakening inheres in a person. And classical Mahayana views is that that's not quite right. There is enlightenment, but it's not your enlightenment.
Right.
There is karma, but it's not exactly your karma. And I think that it connects to this sort of duality, it's very close to this duality between the issue of emptiness or interdependence on one hand,
Good.
Both of those have to respond to or be awake to. And that's precisely what, I mean, it's one of the things that Vajra number one, if there's a difference between the two, doesn't recognize. I mean, it's very interesting that he comes, his whole man comes, and he says, I'm stuck in a foxfire. You know, he's presenting as the old man. You know, and then when he dies, and is released from the fox body, they fish him out of a cave. It's a fox body, you know. So it has to do with this thing of not being willing to sort of fully engage in, fox or man, or whatever, in who he actually is, and really engage with the conditions without thinking that it's his. But it's his to pick up, or it's his to get rid of.
Right, right.
You know, it had, I think of the line of chant, you know, it's separating from sitting back here and now. And that's in the end, he does it. He's Fox, you know, and he takes it, you know, there's a way he takes it on, and that's his liberation in a sense.
Yeah, but he's dead. It's a dead Fox. So this just keeps turning. And I'm tempted to throw in the dispute between Stephen Batchelor and Bob Thurman, but I don't know if that's too much.
There's also this issue of getting dirty, right?
Yes.
Bodhisattva action is like it's like
being caught in the mud of the world.
It happens flatly, and doing it willingly for the benefit of all beings, and that or has to do with his relation with the sort of second spinning of the dog poem, right? Where it says, a dog of good nature, and yes, it's politically transgressive.
Right. And there are people right now who are getting splattered by mud and soaked as they go to respond and try and help the people who are caught in, who didn't evacuate and are caught. And, you know, anyway, there's a cataclysm going on right now. And I have friends and family in North Carolina, and it was in the area where in the area where this hurricane touched down. So it's and then you're bringing up bodhisattva activity. How do we respond? How do we get caught in the mud? And one of the many things that's going on in this story is the question of rebirth. This old man who was the former Bajang gets reborn as a fox, and again for 500 lifetimes. And so the question of rebirth. So this rebirth, which is just like, you know, each period there's another zazen. But then there's this idea of rebirth and from body to body, like reincarnation almost. I don't know which one to present first, but Robert Thurman, who Uma Thurman used to be Robert's daughter, but now he's Uma Thurman's dad. Anyway, he's a great Tibetan Buddhist scholar, and he said you have to believe in rebirth and reincarnation to do the bodhisattva practice, because we're not going to fix all of this. We're not going to switch from fossil fuel to renewable and stop trying to take advantage of the planet, in this lifetime. So we have to do this over many lifetimes. So Robert Thurman asserted that you have to believe in rebirth to do the bodhisattva practice. I don't agree, but I also don't necessarily disagree about the possibilities of rebirth that he talks about. Stephen Batchelor, who's another very well-known, more secular American Buddhist scholar who was a monk in Korea and had extensive serious practice background, says that in the West we have to discard that idea of rebirth and reincarnation, that's a trap and that it's dangerous and I was once at a conference with Stephen Batchelor, and I said that I sort of agree with both sides, and he got very angry and he said, no, you can't We have to do the work in this lifetime. Don't wait till if we think we're going to have other lifetimes to take care of things, that's terrible. You have to, you know. So anyway, there's that. That's part of the story too. Yes, Aishan.
I don't necessarily take rebirth quite so literally as that. I think we are reborn every day.
Yes.
And we're going to continue to be reborn the same if we don't sort of see what we're doing. You know, that's somebody's definition of insanity, is doing the same thing over and over.
Yes. Yes.
Like just for a specific example, if we're binge drinking every day, we are going to, maybe for a while, it will seem like we're getting away with it, you know, maybe we're hungover, but then, you know, you get up, you go to work. But eventually we're going to wind up with a whole host of diseases, some of which, you know, we're not going to be able to undo.
Right.
And so, but still in that person who's in that state, there is Buddha nature. And so
the possibility of change is always there. That's right.
Well, the possibility of changing something is always there. But I mean, we can get ourselves into situations that we can't undo. You know, physically, this physical body is going to deteriorate because of some of the actions that we're taking, and this planet is going to deteriorate because of some of the actions that we're taking. But there's still Buddha nature there. So how can we respond to the situation, you know, given our particular position?
Well, yes, I agree with all of that. But there's also in this story and in the Stephen Batchelor and Robert Thurman talking about rebirth on the literal version of rebirth from lifetime to lifetime. So that's a question too. But yes, yes to everything you just said. But he's talked about his own past lives. He spoke to, according to the sutras, talked to his disciples about who they were in a past life several hundred lifetimes ago, and who they were going to be in future lifetimes. So it's part of the tradition. And Stephen Batchelor is saying we should throw that part of it out. Anyway, that's maybe a footnote in this story, but it's there with the Baijiang and the fox.
Sure, but I don't think the Buddha said, I mean, I don't know that any of that is really foreordained.
Yeah, I don't, you know.
But we're going to be in a future lifetime.
Oh, it's not about predestination. That's important. It's not. So not ignoring cause and effect means that everything we do right now will have an effect. And even if we have been a binge drinker in the past, what we do today makes a difference.
Yeah.
That's the basic. So study of karma and study of cause and effect is part of the implication of this. That yes, we have to look at the possibility. I mean, a current but notable example, I heard somebody on TV saying, talking about a prominent politician who lacked empathy totally, but they said, well, maybe they don't lack to, and he was asked if he was a sociopath, and said yes, but it's not that he totally lacks empathy, it's just that it's buried very, very, very deep, and he can't recognize it. That was what was asserted anyway, just on, you know.
This is like a kind of an academic question.
Well, but if you're somebody who comes to Zen practice, and you've done some bad stuff, or you've acted in unwholesome ways, it's not so academic.
No, but that prominent politician is not coming to Zen practice, as far as we know.
Well, not yet.
So whether it's there or not, whether it's not there or not, is an academic question until
okay.
You know, you have conditions to.
I mean, we're getting off the track of the fox koan, but maybe this is exactly the fox koan, that we get caught in this with all these wild foxes. And there is the story of Angulimala. You all know about Angulimala. Phyllis, you don't know about Angulimala? He was one of the 10 great disciples of Shakyamuni who had previously been a serial killer. And Shakyamuni got him to stop murdering people. and then he became an arhat. He still had to face the consequences of his previous actions when some of his victims' families came after him and did him in. But anyway, we can go on and on and on.
But we're having to face the consequences of our ancestors' previous actions.
That too, yes.
So that's, you know, maybe the way in which things are reborn.
Lots of ways, yes.
There's a way in which, you know, I'm just seeing, I personally think it's kind of a rabbit hole, you know, and this is what the Buddha says in Amitabha Sutra, that, you know, trying to sort this out, you know, this gets in the way of leading the holy life. But I will point out that, you know, and it's not an unimportant question, but there is sort of a view or sort of a thing that folds in both Stephen Batchelor and Robert Thurman, because whether you're talking about this life or a sort of more traditional view of lifetime after life, lifetime of bodhisattva commitment, the issue with the bodhisattva is that he doesn't escape into enlightenment. And so in both those approaches, it's a matter of, like, not checking out. It's like, and not seeking, you know, awakening, or having this idea that can be for you.
Yeah, and that then you can go ahead and do anything and to anybody because you're enlightened, you know. Yeah. Okay, well, we should stop, but we have a whole weekend to keep going. Did you have something, Levi?
But I can save it for this afternoon.
Save it for this afternoon. We'll have a discussion this afternoon, and we'll be talking about this the next couple of days, and I'll try and Monday night go over it, too. So let's close, though, with the Bodhisattva Vows.